We'll hear argument now in the case of Shulei Lai against Holder.
Good morning, Your Honors.
We'll wait until the rustling has stopped. Mr. Ma.
Good morning, Your Honors. Peng Qian Ma for the petitioner in this case, Your Honors. Each time we come to this court, we have to visit again and again the issue relating to the application of the Real ID Act. But before discussing the issues relating to that act, we request that this court reverse the Immigration Court and the BIA based on the two legal errors committed by both tribunals. First of all, the petitioner was arrested in China two times. The first time was for his whistleblowing activities. Some corrupt officials just get money from the government, embezzled money from the government. He reported this embezzling activity to certain government authorities. But the immigration judge ruled that his whistleblowing was not loud enough, so he was not protected under the five categories of under the asylum law. He did blow the whistle, and he was arrested for blowing the whistle. How loud? He did not make public protest. That's the basis of the denial of relief. But that's wrong. As long as he blow the whistle...
Counsel, your main problem, I think, is the immigration judge found that your client was not credible.
Yep.
And one of the bases of that finding is that he admittedly committed fraud in order to enter the United States. I notice that your brief doesn't even mention that aspect of the immigration judge's decision. I don't see how you're going to get anywhere on appeal by ignoring the principal ground of the decision against you.
Your Honor, I did not try this case at the hearing.
I don't but care from who the record, tried the case.
Yeah, but from the record... He did explain that the application and the misrepresentations was not made by him. He traveled to the United States through the arrangements of a travel agency. Someone else helped him fill out the application forms. And also this court has held repeatedly that misrepresentations made at the consulate for escaping the country of persecution should not be a basis for denying application for relief.
He went counsel. Back, though, didn't he?
Yeah.
He returned.
Yes. Not only did he return to China after that, but the ALJ considered that there was no necessity for these lies. Now, that comes within the scope of our opinion in Al Saglati. But the reason I ask you this question is that your brief simply ignores the principal ground on which the immigration judge rejected this application. And I don't see how you can expect to prevail in the Court of Appeals never having addressed the principal ground on which your client lost.
We did address the issues. The first is the misrepresentation.
Never addressed the ALJ, the immigration judge's finding about fraud in entering the United States. It's not mentioned.
We cite a couple of Seventh Circuit cases on that point in our brief. That's we did address the issue, Your Honor. That issue is not at the heart of the of his claim for past persecution, anyways. And we cited a couple of cases issued by this circuit saying that the misrepresentations made at the consulate do not necessarily prevent a respondent from filing an application for asylum that we did cite to the cases. Our position is that that issue is not at the heart of his claim. And also the whistleblowing. He returned to China, but he was arrested again after his return. That's the reason why he filed an application for asylum. He brought some materials back to China, and that's the publications published by the Falun Gong organizations. That's the second legal error committed by the immigration judge. The judge said you did not belong to a social group, and you were not a practitioner of Falun Gong. You are not a practitioner. And although the government believed that you were, but you did not practice Falun Gong. But in this case, the matter is he brought Falun Gong materials back to China. And we have to understand, although for so many years of development, the Chinese population is still curious about the outside world. Anything different from the publications made in China is very interesting to the people over there. He showed the materials to several friends, and he was discovered by the government, and he was arrested. Isn't that enough for making a claim of past persecution? And although he not publicized the publication, but he showed the materials to friends. And that's not a matter of a social group. It's a matter of speech. Of course, he wanted to show what people say about China outside the world. That's very important. That's the freedom of speech is, first of all, is a very political issue. That he wanted to express his political opinion. He wants to distribute this kind of opinion. Of course, whether the opinion is correct or wrong, it doesn't matter, but the people should have the right to do it. And he did, for which he was detained, he was beaten, and the nose was broken. That's enough. The two legal errors, we asked the court to seriously consider the two legal errors committed by the lower tribunals. And also, the Real ID Act. First of all, how much corroboration should be required under the Real ID Act? In this case, the petitioner provided corroboration evidence. For instance, the medical records of a broken nose, and also a letter from his parents. But the judge misunderstood his testimony. The judge said, you did not provide a letter from your sister who provided financial assistance for your escape to the United States. But later the judge said, this kind of letters we give very little weight because it's your family member and they will say whatever you want them to say. But the letter from the parents that just corresponded with his testimony, that's we cannot require the respondent to just provide chain of evidence, everything mentioned in his testimony, in his application, to provide evidence.
Well, if it's established, at least in your case, that they did beat him up when they found these magazines.
Right.
Okay, let's accept that. Is that enough persecution to where he can then get out again and not have to go back? Is that what you're saying?
It's totally
different.
We're
not arguing about credibility of whether or not he got beat up. I'm just asking if he, let's say, the old joke, friends like those who need enemies, right?
Right.
All right. They told on him and sicked the government on him, and they beat him up because he had these magazines that said nasty things about China. And so they beat him up. Now, you're claiming that's the persecution that in the past that justifies his not having to go back. Is that right?
Your Honor, this case involves two totally unrelated incidents.
Well, the first time, we've already covered that, where
he lied
to get in and then went back.
Yeah, the reason that he went back was not clear. Why he went back, he returned to China, it was not clear. But it could be out of many reasons, because this is a foreign country to him. There might be personal necessity for him to go back to China. Maybe he thought the first instance of persecution was over, and that's understandable. There is nothing that is not understandable for him to return to China after the first incidence of arrest.
Well, you said he lied to escape. You know, I think you used that word. He wanted to escape, so he let them give phony business he worked for and business travel for the visa, right?
Right.
Yeah, and then for whatever reason, things were better. Maybe they forgot about it. He went back home.
Your Honor, when I said escape, I was also referring to the second trip to the United States.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the that was also an escape, and he didn't return this time.
No.
Okay. And then the letters of verification. That's the
counsel.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Quick.
May it please the Court. My name is Eric Quick. I'm with the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Immigration Litigation, on behalf of the respondent. Your Honors, really, this case, the issues here can be easily summarized. And the two issues are thus. Mr. Lee points to absolutely no evidence that would compel a reasonable adjudicator to conclude to the contrary about that adverse credibility finding. Mr. Lee argues that he provides an adequate or a reasonable explanation, and that is neither sufficient, of course, nor is it the standard. The Board here provided specific and cogent legal reasons for that adverse credibility finding. It noted at least two inconsistencies, and Your Honor dealt with the one that he had, let's say, a propensity for misrepresentation because he filed those false visa applications with the United States government on five different occasions. The Board also found that the testimony he was in hiding was inconsistent with the testimony that he must report to the police on
a monthly. Did he make any effort to explain the difference between being in hiding and having to report every 15 days?
That is not really clear. On page 115, he's asked about the inconsistency on cross-examination, and he just says, they caused me to hide everywhere in China. He says that on page 93 of the record. And then he says, I was afraid that they would give me other additional trouble in addition to the report requirement. And that's on page 115. So it's not really explained, Your Honor. And that is why the Board found that inconsistency. They also found it implausible that he would risk bringing anti-government material into China when he claims he did not know it would be risky. So therefore, the immigration judge required cooperation. And, of course, the immigration judge has substantial leeway to so require. And that decision to require cooperation, is not to be reversed unless a reasonable fact finder would be compelled to conclude the cooperating evidence is not available. And, again, the Board found that there was no evidence that he worked at the Scissors Company, someplace that he had allegedly worked for over 18 years. There was nothing from coworkers to whom he allegedly showed this anti-government material. There was nothing to show that fines were indeed paid on two occasions. And there was nothing from his sister, someone with whom he admittedly has current contact with.
With regard to the reporting to the police and hiding from the police, is it possible that there are two different levels of authority? Like over here, you know, you've got a sheriff and you've got city police, two different levels of law enforcement or different entities of law enforcement. Is it possible he was having to report to one and another one was after him?
That's impossible.
Why I'm trying to understand how he had to do both.
It's certainly not clear.
He was hiding and had to report.
It's certainly not clear from the record. And I think that also gets to whether he provided an adequate or reasonable explanation like he contends, but that, of course, is not what that standard requires, whether a reasonable adjudicator is compelled to conclude to the contrary. And Your Honors did get as well to that waiver issue. There are at least three arguments the gentleman waived. One was that adverse credibility. He did not challenge in his brief that he filed five false visa applications with the U.S. government. He doesn't challenge that aspect of the adverse credibility determination. He also doesn't challenge in his brief that he should have provided corroboration by submitting materials from his coworkers to whom he allegedly showed this material. And he doesn't challenge in the brief that he should have provided corroboration from his sister, again, someone with whom he says he has continual contact. He also did not, the board itself did not address the merits of his asylum or his withholding of removal claims. So therefore, this court, as we point out in our brief, does not have jurisdiction to entertain the merits of the asylum or the withholding claims. There's just no jurisdiction under 8 U.S.C. 1252A1. And then there is at least one argument that was not exhausted, and that he did not challenge the Convention Against Torture denial. He did not challenge that denial in his brief to the board. So therefore, he did not exhaust that administrative remedy, and this court then cannot entertain at least the merits of that underlying claim as well. If we can get then to what the board, and we are reviewing here the board's decision to the extent, again, there was substantial evidence to support that not credible finding. Again, there was the board determined that he it was inconsistent and not credible that he went into hiding yet has to report to the police. They found it was not plausible that a man who was arrested, beaten, and fired for trying to expose government corruption would then risk bringing into China later anti-government materials. And the credibility was also undermined by the repeated use of false information, those five false visa applications. And as Your Honors noted, this was not an escape from asylum context or from persecution context, because the gentleman, of course, returns to China after his first visit to the United States. He had already filed four fraudulent visa applications before he returns then to China.
Of those four, did he? I only understood he came over here once under a false visa, or at least the first one. You say there were five?
There were five. It looks to be that there was one in March 31, 2008, February 14th, and February 22nd in 2008, February 8th in 2009, and March 30, 2010.
So he made back and forth trips all those times?
No, he did not. He only made two trips.
Okay.
The record isn't clear what happens to the first three.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know, really. Okay.
Yeah, he enters in April of 2009 and then returns to China in July of 2000.
You got the visas, didn't use it.
Okay. Presumably, yes, Your Honor. Then, of course, it was reasonable to require corroboration. Again, he doesn't present any evidence that he works at the scissors company, somewhere where he had worked for 18 years. There's nothing from his coworkers whatsoever to show that he showed them this anti-government material. In fact, he waives that because he doesn't address that in his brief. There's nothing to show how and by whom those fines were really paid, and there's nothing from his sister whatsoever, that someone from whom, again, that he has continual contact with, that she assisted him in paying the fines or worked on his behalf. And again, he does not challenge that cooperation finding.
Now, she's financed him with the snakehead, is that it? A lot of money, what, $60,000 or something?
It's a considerable amount of money, and it's pointed out in the briefs this is many times over and above his annual salary, yes, Your Honor. It's just not clear from the record exactly how that's paid, if indeed it is paid from his sister. It's not clear. But again,
the first one he alleges was paid by his parents?
There is a letter in the record from the parents that says that they paid one of those fines, yes, Your Honor.
The smaller?
I believe so, yes. Yes. But again, there's nothing from his sister whatsoever to state what she paid or whether she paid that. So for those reasons, Your Honors, and if the court has no further questions, we ask that the court deny the petition for review.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Our next case.